Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Questions from the Audio Road. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford, and I'll be taking your calls and answering your questions for the next hour or so. Lisa is here with us, screening calls and keeping things light and fun. If you want to join in, simply press 1 on your phone, and Lisa will be right with you. This is the show that puts the money where it belongs, back in your pocket. Sit back, relax, and listen, or jump in and ask your question. You can even bring us your opinion. It's up to you. This is your show. You can ask questions about fuel mileage, tires, engine, EGR, aerodynamics, truck specing, maintenance, taxes, financial planning, getting started as an owner-operator, or anything else about the business of trucking. Here we go. Let's head on down the audio road.
Hi, this is Lisa. Remember to talk to Kevin, press 1 so I can pick up the phone and screen your calls. You know you'd rather talk to me anyway. Or just sit back, relax, and listen to the show. And at any time you have a question, just hit 1 and I'll pick up the phone.
Welcome to Questions from the Audio Road. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. Lisa's here screening your calls. If you're listening online and you'd like to join us live, you might want to jump in quick. Last couple shows, the lines have filled up early and stayed that way throughout the show, but there's still room. Pick up the phone and dial 347-884-8327. If you're on the call and you have a question, a comment, a topic, whatever it might be, press 1 on your phone. You'll talk to Lisa first, and then we will get to those calls here during the show. Again, we almost always run out of time before we run out of calls. We tend to get a lot of calls right at the end of the show, the last 15 minutes. And I hate when I have to hang up and end the show and I don't get to them all. So get them in early. I'll kind of judge how many we have, and I'll try to make sure we get everybody in. I do have a couple things I want to get to first, and then we'll get to those calls. But if you're on the call, if you're on your phone and you've got a question, a comment, a topic, whatever it might be, press 1. Lisa will get to you, and then we'll get started on those in a little bit. Something I want to talk about here that I like, and there's an aspect to this article and this story that I really like and one that I really hate. And it's Cummins is working on the Super Truck program. I love the concept. I love the idea. I hate that it's being funded by the Department of Energy. In my opinion, the government needs to stay out of private enterprise. These kind of projects, if they can't make it in the free market, then I guess we shouldn't be doing them. And the reason why is, why should one company get a whole bunch of government money, our money? Let's stop saying government money. It's not the government's money. It's our money. Why should a private company, whether we like them or not, I like Cummins, but why should any company get our money to invest in something that they're going to sell commercially when it works? If it works, we're not going to get the money back. The private company is going to benefit from it. If it fails, we still had to pay for it. So as much as I love this project, and I'm going to tell you what it is in a second, it's just wrong that the government is funding anything, in my opinion, when it comes to private enterprise. This stuff should be, there are plenty of companies out there right now working on this kind of stuff on their own without government money. This particular project, part of the Super Truck program, which is a bigger program, is a joint venture between Cummins and a company called Van Dyne. And they're working on, Van Dyne is working on a project called a Super Turbo. And it's pretty interesting technology. And they're working so that this technology will be adapted to a Cummins engine for the Super Truck project. The Van Dyne Super Turbocharger works by combining a turbocharger with its own CVT transmission to increase fuel efficiency and horsepower while reducing CO2 emissions. Additionally, the Super Turbocharger is a product that has the low-end torque of a supercharger, even higher power than a turbocharger, and it's combined with the efficiency gains of turbo compounding all in one device. So it sounds like pretty cool technology, and I do want to see it. Turbo compounding is already being used by Detroit in the DD15, and it is a great technology. It recovers wasted heat from the turbocharger and converts it back into power for the engine by using it to drive the engine again. This takes that concept one step further. Turbo compounding is actually working out pretty good on the DD15, and it's energy that would have been lost, heat and lost energy out the exhaust pipe, being converted back to engine horsepower, almost 50 horsepower on the DD15. So now it looks like I'd love to see one of these. A turbocharger, supercharger, CVT transmission, that's kind of interesting, because what's happening here, and I'm only picturing this because I haven't been able to find any details, I'm really not sure how they're combining the supercharger and the turbocharger. I'd have to see that. The turbo compounding, then, if they take all that lost energy and they're going to put it through this CVT transmission, it must be a very small CVT transmission, and then somehow redrive the engine again with this lost power. So it's a very interesting technology. I'd like to see it. But as much as I like it, it really bugs me when I see that, let's see, how much? I thought I saw the amount of money in here. Let me look for it. Yeah, $39 million. Cummins alone, as part of this Super Truck program, one company has been awarded $39 million of our dollars, and they're going to use that money to develop commercial products that they'll eventually sell back to us. That's just wrong. That's my opinion anyway. I've got a couple other things, but you know what? I see a lot of hands going up, so maybe I better get some phone calls, and I'll try to come back to some of this. If you have questions, comments, topics, whatever it might be, press 1 on your phone. Lisa will screen those calls, and I'm going to start getting to them right now. Right from the top of the list, let's go to Oregon. Ryan, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, Kevin. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome. What's on your mind?
I got an Acer Cat, and in the second turbo, out the exhaust side, I noticed a black liquid dripping from the band clamp coming out of the turbo. Kind of alarmed me, so I dug in a little bit. I didn't take the exhaust pipe off, but I took the pipe between the two turbos off. And the secondary turbo, the high-pressure turbo, is actually dry inside. So my concern is that it's oil from the seal on the second turbo, or the low-pressure turbo, but it seems to be more liquid than oil. Well, that doesn't make sense. It seems...
I know what you mean. It's too thin to be oil.
Exactly. That's what it seemed like.
Yeah, one of the things that we've seen is actually what can cause this, and I'm not nearly as familiar with the turbo setup on the Acerts, but
okay. One
of the things that can happen on any turbo is that we're actually getting some fuel blow-by, and it mixes with the soot and some of the other junk in the exhaust in the turbo, and it looks like oil because it's so black, but it's not oil.
See, that's what I'm afraid of. I'm about to go drop $2,000 on a turbo for fear that it might blow out the compressor side and I'll start sucking oil and, you know, have possible, engine runaway.
You know who, now, I don't think that's going to happen, but you know who I want you to call who is just much more familiar with the setup is Pittsburgh Power.
Okay, I talked to Pete a little bit, and he said he's more the Cummins guy than the Cat guy, so he couldn't. He said it's something that is often seen in these twin turbos. The low pressure turbo will blow out the seal because the pressures are so much higher.
Okay.
I mean, in your opinion, knowing what you know, if possibly it is oil, I mean, should I just be safe and spend the $2,000 and do it?
No, I wouldn't. I would rather find somebody. And there just aren't as many people that are as familiar with the A-certs. I mean, even Cat people don't like messing with this engine a whole lot. You know, I don't mean a Cat shop. Obviously, they work on them. When I say, you know, when we talk about, you know, Bruce understanding 3406 or, you know, even the 6NZs, those guys, or the Cummins, those guys know those engines inside and out.
Yeah.
I don't really know anybody, and there must be somebody out there that has put that kind of effort into understanding the A-certs.
Yeah.
But I'd really like to find somebody that could look at that turbo and say, no, here's what's going on, and maybe you do have to replace the turbo.
Yeah.
And if it was $300 or $400, I might say, yeah, let's just do it to be safe, but $2,000 is a pretty big chunk if we don't have to spend it.
Well, let me throw two little things in extra. One, I was going to do it when I first found it. I thought it was oil. The next day, I looked, and it was dry. There was nothing dripping out. I had spent that night idling a little bit. It was pretty warm. So, you know, the second day when I didn't see anything dripping out, that's when I kind of went, well, wait a second. That if it was oil, it would be dripping out no matter what. Now, secondly,
if the seal is blown, we're going to get oil all the time.
Exactly. So my other issue is Caterpillar wants $2,060 for the turbo, and that's for me to put it on myself. I've got my mechanic guy who's pretty proficient with this kind of stuff. He can get the turbo for $1,400 and put it on for, you know, for less than $400, tax license, registration out the door.
Okay.
That's a pretty good deal. You know,
if this is my choice, I have to spend $2,000 and do all the work, or I spend $1,800 and I can go drink a beer while somebody else does it. That's a pretty easy choice for me.
No, absolutely. And I'm definitely planning on using him. I'm just afraid that, you know, I don't know. I'll just have him look at it and see what he thinks. Kind of go from there.
I would. I think if he's worked with the A-certs enough, he may be able to look at this and tell you what's going on before we tear into it, before, you know, we spend the money on a turbo.
Yep. I have one more quick question.
Sure.
I lost an oil line, a steel-braided oil line, lost about 4 gallons of oil before I was able to get somewhere where I could fill it back up and get a new line to put it on. This was about 6,000 miles after my oil change. I go about 15,000 miles between my oil changes. Should I, having put, four, well, it was more like 5 gallons, can I push off my oil change, you think?
Yeah. Yeah, you can. I mean, you changed almost 50% of the oil.
Yeah.
I mean, logically, if you've been getting, and I assume you're not doing any oil analysis, you're just changing at 15,000.
No, I'm doing oil analysis. I had you look at one of them, and you said my oil samples come back really clean. So.
Okay, and that's kind of what I was getting at. If we know that at 15,000 under normal conditions your oil samples are good, then we can easily say by replacing 50% of the oil, safely we've extended that drain interval by 25%. So
okay.
I wouldn't have a problem going to 20,000 on the drain.
Okay, perfect. Thank you for your time. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. We're probably safe even out to 25, but no question 20 without a doubt. Let's go to Illinois. George, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Kevin. How you doing?
I'm doing good. What's on your mind tonight?
Hey, I'll make a comment on this $39 million super truck project from the government.
Yeah.
And the big scope of things, I think if you have the amount of money the government makes on fuel tax versus the $39 million, I think you'd find that the government really probably doesn't want 10-mile-per-gallon trucks because they're going to lose a lot of money on tax revenues. So I don't much go for their smoke and mirrors with trying to help out the truck drivers.
Yeah, well, that's a good point. I hadn't even thought about that side of it. And that throws a whole nother twist in there. But my point is, even if they are trying to help, first of all, they're the most inefficient organization going. I mean, if you and I spend $39 million, we'd get some results. They can spend $39 million and end up with nothing. And I don't like the idea that they keep handing out our money to private companies who are going to develop commercial products that they're going to sell back to us again.
Yeah, that's a vicious circle there, isn't it?
It is. I mean, I think it's fantastic if companies want to go out and develop this kind of stuff, but use your own damn money. You know?
Right.
Don't use mine.
Right. Well, I think like the gentleman who just called, let's get rid of the 2 turbos per truck unless you're running 1,100 horsepower. Let's get rid of the fuel injection into the exhaust system because, in my mind, that's just ignorant. You might as well just be pouring fuel out the window while you're driving down the road. It's the same thing.
I know. It's a bunch of crazy technology, and this is what we get when the government gets involved. And like I say, I'd love to see this particular product with this super turbocharger. I'd love to see it because it's got a lot of promise, but if it takes $40 million of our money to make it real, then I don't want it.
I agree. I think we've got plenty of stuff to work with now, and as we're seeing with the signature trucks, if you put some effort and time into really concentrating on your fuel mileage, and I'll throw a challenge out there. Let's have a race to 10 miles per gallon, okay? You do a great job of challenging everybody out here on the road to do better in your business.
Right.
So let's challenge each other to see who can get to 10 miles per gallon first. And I will bet you this, Kevin, if we can make an effort on this, we'll beat the government by about 5 years.
I agree. I mean, the government's been doing this kind of stuff for a long time, and what do we have to show for it? And yet, on the signature truck, we went out and we got some pretty darn small companies together. We took the technology that's already available on the market, we put it all together with some common sense and some logic, and we're pushing that 9-mile-to-the-gallon number before we've even looked at the trailer.
Yeah, and we haven't spent the $39 million yet either, so we've got plenty of time to dig into that kind of money.
Yeah,
oh,
exactly. It's interesting. I was talking to a rep from Meritor today, and it was
mm-hmm.
just out of the blue, and we got talking about the signature truck. And I told him what kind of fuel mileage we were doing, and he said, wow, what are you doing to get that kind of fuel mileage? And I started to tell him, and he said, everything that we did on the signature truck, he said, you know what? He said, we're about a year away from releasing those types of things as commercial products. He said, we want to get back to direct drive transmissions and gear ratios that match direct drive transmissions. We're building what they're going to call a smart tandem axle. Well, guess what it is? It's a single drive axle in the rear with a liftable forward axle.
Well,
where have they been? Where have they been? You know?
Here's why nobody's really putting any effort, because they're not paying for the fuel. I can guarantee you if they started buying fuel for these trucks, they'd be interested in doubling their fuel mileage really quick.
Yeah, you're right. Well, you know what? We're starting to get some fleet interest. I have a couple fleets that I need to talk to right now. We're building some not full-blown signature trucks for them because some of that technology just it's not really ready for fleet application yet. But we're building them some about halfway in between. We're putting, I'm working with each company saying, look, let's take a look at your operation. Let's build one truck or maybe even up to five. You guys run these, and I'm going to tell you, we will get a mile to a mile and a half per gallon better than any other truck you've got in your operation. And they said, if we can reach those goals, they'll order, you know, 30 more, 50 more, 100 more, which is pretty amazing. The challenge, and I was going to announce this at the beginning of the show, the signature truck that we were building for Dallas is already sold. And because the company that wants it, they run a very specific operation, the specs are going to be quite a bit different. So we're scrambling in the last couple days now. And I mean the last couple days. We have to leave Sunday night, and we're changing the specs on the truck this late. Here's why. The company runs 78,000 to 80,000 pounds, loaded max all the time. They run East Coast to West Coast, hauling meat with teams. And here's the kicker, 72 miles an hour. And they won't budge off that. And they understand that, you know, if we could get them to slow down, how much it would help. But they're not going to budge off that 72. So what they said was, you build us the very best fuel mileage you can at 72 miles an hour. So that's what we're doing. And that's quite a challenge. We've got to rethink a lot of the stuff that we normally do, and we're kind of under the gun here. We have to build it by Sunday night.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I guess if we all just started to haul freight in Mars and then outer space where the laws of physics on Earth don't apply, I can see trying to put a lot of money, and I mean, you know, putting, you know, $40,000-$50,000 into a 70 mile per hour truck to try to get fuel mileage. But I can tell you right now, Kevin, I've slowed down to 55 miles an hour, and that's not when it's convenient. It's not when I'm empty. It's not when I'm really heavy. That's all the time. Okay.
All the time.
I fueled up today next to a guy with a Peterbilt, one of those long hoods. I showed him my fuel mileage, and he said, "Well, I'm getting 5.5." So I did some numbers on my 8.5 miles per gallon, which is what I'm getting here this month.
Right.
Okay. The difference between 5.5 and 8.5, gentlemen, is $23,775 a year.
That is, you know, I've been doing this a long time, and I know those numbers. I calculate them all the time. But every time I hear them, I just wonder why we can't get this across to everybody. $23,000 in your pocket, bottom line money.
That's saving. See, this is the part that people don't understand is when you go out and earn money, you have to pay tax on it, and then you have to these other things, pay for your maintenance, you know, oil and things for your truck. That's savings. That's money you've already made that you don't have to spend. That's more than the money you're going to make tomorrow. I don't think people really grasp that concept.
No, here's the thing. In a very, very efficient owner-operator operation, if we figure equipment, all the other expenses, if we can net 40% of what we gross, we're doing really good after all expenses. I use 50%, you know, before equipment and that kind of stuff. So in order to match, if you take somebody that says, "Yeah, but I run fast because the faster I run, the more miles I get, and this freight pays better, and I have to go fast," and all those things. But in order to match your $23,000, if we do it on the revenue side by trying to increase our revenue, they have to make almost $55,000 more a year gross to make that $23,000 net.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, no, it's more than that. It's over $60,000. They'd have to do over 60.
That's a lot of driving.
It's not going to happen. Yeah, not going to happen.
No, it's not. I think just how you look at your business and your perspective on where you want to go will take you places, but sticking with what we've done for years and years has to go out the window. Let me get to my questions here before I run you out of time. I get some other people online here. The fuel mileage makeover, how are you guys coming on that? Have you got any progress on it, or where are you at with that?
Did you not get it?
I haven't got any contact at all, but I have put the the Pleat air filter on. I did that at the last day of the month, last month. And so far, I'm getting between 0.4 and 0.5 tenths on my mileage.
Okay. What I'm going to do, what happened in the heat of that week and me trying to put a new computer system in here, we might have lost some of those.
Okay.
And I want to make sure I've got a bunch, but I know we didn't have the database when I came back to it after the CMC. We didn't have everything we did. So I'm going to put you on hold, and I'm going to have Lisa pick back up. And what I want to do is get the information from me again so we can go back through and look to see what happened with yours.
Okay. I had the idea of putting my a fuel tank on my catwalk for my APU.
Okay.
I've got the tank. I'm going to have it painted and installed, and that's going to be my next month's project. My question was, you said there were some tax benefits if I can purchase that separate from my road fuel.
Right.
How does that work?
Two ways to accomplish this. One is if you can buy untaxed off-road fuel. Then obviously the fuel's cheaper. You don't have to pay the tax. If DOT looks in the tank and it's died, not a problem because we're not using it for on-road use, being used in the APU. If you're not able to buy it or it's just too much trouble, you can just put taxed fuel in there all year long, keep those receipts separate, and then on your income tax return, your 1040 at the end of the year, there is a credit that we can file for to get all of the fuel tax back, the federal fuel tax.
Now, see, there's a way to save some money.
Exactly. Absolutely. No question. All right, I'm going to put you back on hold. Lisa will pick back up. We'll get the information on the fuel mileage makeover, and I'll follow up on that. Let's go to Georgia. Rico, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Kevin. Got a couple of questions for you real quick. The first question is the probably most important one. Is I'm currently a company driver, getting ready to jump into and take the dive and become an owner-operator. I got quite a bit of cash stashed away in my 401k. What's the best vehicle to roll that over into?
Now, I want to make sure we're talking about two separate things here. You don't want to use the cash to become an owner-operator, right?
No.
Okay, good, because that would have been a whole separate issue. Here's what you're going to do on the 401k. You're going to – how old are you?
I'm 36.
Okay. What I want you to do you have something to write with?
Sure.
I want you to call T. Rowe Price, and – When you and I are finished, I'll put you back on hold. I'll have Lisa pick back up, and she'll get a number for you for T. Rowe Price. And I want you to see if they can roll it directly into their, what they call their individual 401k. And if they can, then we're done. They'll make it real easy, and it's just going to be a pretty simple process. If they can't do it directly, then we just have to add one step in between, which is they will roll it from the 401k into an IRA, and then they can convert the IRA into an individual 401k.
Okay.
But ultimately, the account we want to get you into, ultimately, we just have to figure out the mechanics of getting it there, is what's called an individual 401k, and you'll pick your own funds, and it's real simple. I can even help you with that.
Right. Well, that was another caveat I was going to ask you was, I dabble on the side in some real estate, and I was thinking about maybe using that money for some of my real estate investments, maybe picking up some small apartment buildings or something like that. If I can self-direct that 401k.
Now, you won't be able to do that in any of the 401ks that I'm aware of. The law allows it, but the entity that holds the 401k has to allow it, and there isn't any of the companies that I'm aware of that does. Now, there are companies that will do self-directed IRAs that allow you to invest in real estate. I'm not a big fan. I mean, I understand the reasoning and the desire behind it. I'm a pretty aggressive investor, but I think retirement stuff, I would much rather see the 401k just split into three index mutual funds and forget about it and use money on top of that on the real estate side. Just my opinion. But there won't be any individual 401ks that I'm aware of that will allow it. So the other option, if you decided you wanted to go this way, is to find a company that allows a completely self-directed IRA and allows some real estate holdings in it, and you would have to transfer the money to them. And if you're willing to do enough steps, and I can't outline them here because it's going to get somewhat complicated, you
right.
would be able to roll it and then split it into two different accounts, one that would allow the real estate holdings and the other one that would allow it to be back into a 401k. So there are lots of options. What I would recommend, because you're looking at some more advanced strategies, I would recommend
right.
you find a local CFP, a certified financial planner, somebody that you can sit down with face-to-face, and you have lots of time and you're not rushed, and go over some of these possibilities.
Okay. And two other real quick hitters. On the aerodynamics of the Coronado, the stacks on the side, do those need to be moved behind the truck? Earlier this week you had someone talking about solar-powered APUs. Did you get any more information on those, and what was the pricing on those if you had it? Those were my only questions.
Yeah, I can't find anything on the solar-powered APUs that is feasible in today's world. I'm just not seeing anything that works. And I did some preliminary searching and didn't really come up with anything. As far as the specs on the Coronado, yes, I think there's a huge improvement by running the exhaust stacks out the back behind the sleeper or as a weed burner, depending. Now, the signature truck this week is going to have the stacks in front of the sleeper because that's the way the customer wants it. So not only is he running 72 miles an hour, but he's, you know, making it a little tough in some other ways for us. But, you know, we'll build trucks the way the customer wants them. It's just a little bit more of a challenge. Let's go to Kansas City. Victor, welcome to the program.
Hey, thank you. How are you tonight?
I'm doing good. What's on your mind?
Well, I've got another truck, and I've been trying to find a team to run from Kansas City to New York, and I've tried Craigslist, and I tried the Kansas City Star advertise, and I've yet to come up with even a good, you know, I don't even have anybody to fill out an application, and the pay is, you know, I'm offering pretty good pay, and it's a gravy run, runs 6,000 miles a week and be home on weekends. I just wonder if you had any computer, internet stuff that a person might get on that might get some more hits on, or if you had any suggestions on how to try to find a driver.
Wow. I'll tell you what, this is really tough. One of the articles I was going to open with tonight, and we had so many questions, I figured I better get to the questions, was how all these things are coming together all of a sudden to make it really tough to find drivers again. During the recession 08 and 09, so many drivers ended up out of work and they get picked up in other industries, construction and a bunch of other places, and then ultimately decide not to come back out on the road. So we lost a big part of the driver pool to that, and now they're saying that 4 to 8% of the driver pool is going to be eliminated because of CSA 2010. And we have people who are getting out of the industry before they even know if CSA 2010 is going to affect them or not. So one of the things we're already seeing is that the big fleets are in a panic as far as where they're going to get drivers. So there's talk that wages are going to go up and companies are just scrambling. So you're in a tough position right now, and that changed in less than 6 months. 6 months ago, it was so easy to hire a driver, it wasn't even funny. Now, all of a sudden, it's getting really difficult again. So having said all that, if you've tried Craigslist in the local paper, that's sometimes when you're only looking for a couple drivers, those are your best options because they're a little less expensive, believe it or not, than going out to the internet. And the other problem with the internet is you tend to get lost in the hundreds of other fleets that are out there looking.
Yeah.
So, go ahead.
I had I've had probably 8 or 10 people call me. It started on Sunday in Kansas City. I had it on Craigslist for 2 weeks, I guess, looking for just over the road. But in the Kansas City Star, I said I preferred preferable husband-wife team, because it seemed like everybody I talked to said that's the best way to go if you could find them. But I had one couple call, and they just sounded really interested and told them where to go fill an application. I haven't had one person go to fill an application. I have 8 or 10 people that's called me the last 2 days. But no, I thought maybe there might be some other way of going to maybe to get some more applicants. I didn't know. I thought I'd check with
you. There is. One of the things to do that doesn't cost you anything except time is to hit all the forums, all the driver forums, like the forums on my website, Let's Truck. You just, write a blog, post a forum, and there are a lot of other, active driver forums out there. It does require time. Doesn't cost you anything in money. And sometimes that's a quick way to come up with somebody without spending a lot of money, but you will spend some time. It's going to be fairly labor-intensive.
Give that a try.
Idea. Jump on our forum. There's 25,000 members. Not all of them are in the forums, but a lot of times what will happen is when you start to get active on forums like that, somebody may read it, and they're not interested, but their brother-in-law and, their sister are.
Word of mouth.
So you get a lot more word of mouth from stuff like that. Whereas, people who aren't looking for a job aren't going to be reading the classifieds, so you don't get that word of mouth the way you might on a forum.
Right.
In the forum, you've got people who may or may not be looking for a job, but you have them reading it, and they'll go, I have a friend who's looking for a job just like that. So if you get busy and get active in forums, you may come up with something. Is this, just out of curiosity, is this for FedEx Ground?
No, it's
okay.
Pulling Harley stuff back and forth from warehouse to factory.
Because you've got to
run.
Yeah, it sounds a lot like we do, and it's usually much easier to find, somebody to fill a job like that. Yeah. So
I sure appreciate it, Kevin.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call, and good luck with that.
Thank you.
It looks like we're back into that whole driver issue where it's going to be tough between the economy and CSA 2010 and what's going on with freight. We've got some challenges again. Let's go to North Carolina. Doug, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. Listen, I talked to you the other night. I think it was Monday night, maybe. I talked to you about my turbo, and I was getting some oil that was dripping off of the bottom backside at that gate valve on the turbo. And
right.
I think you told me it was like something that would happen, it was like a sloppy turbo or whatever you wanted to call it.
Right.
And I got 956,000 miles on this truck, and it's never had an imprint done on it. And I wanted to run across a couple of symptoms of the truck. I I just recently changed the tires on my truck. I went with the Yokohama 617 from the Bridgestone M726s, and
okay.
I really hadn't made any progress, maybe a few tenths on my fuel mileage, but I've noticed here in the past few weeks that my turbo boost gauge, it seems to go higher than it used to, than it was, you know, a few weeks ago. And I was just wondering if that's somewhere leading that the turbo may be failing, or would that have anything to do with it? And my fuel mileage not increasing hardly any at all?
Well, we have to start to separate some of these issues, and we have to get a little more specific. And I don't think that they're related, but we have to start measuring things a little more precisely maybe to figure out what's going on.
Yeah.
When you say your turbo boost is going higher, what would be before this started, what is the absolute maximum turbo boost this thing would produce? If you're on a big, long climb and you just keep your foot right in it, how much turbo boost would the engine produce?
It's probably going up almost to probably 25 to 28. And, you know, a few months ago, I would never get anywhere even close to being that high.
Would you get 22?
I might would get that a long, you know, several months ago. But now it's going, you know, 28. It's really getting on up there. And you know, I try to keep an eye on it, and it just kept striking me, you know, as, man, I ain't never seen it go that high before.
Has there been any changes made to the truck that could account for that new air filter, anything done with the charger cooler, any ECM settings changed? I mean, turbo boost is really almost a direct measure of how much horsepower we're producing. So when we get more turbo boost, we're producing more horsepower. I mean, there's almost a direct correlation. So
right.
It's usually not an indication that something's going wrong. It's an indication that something's going right.
Okay. Well, that's a good thing then. I'm going to go to the Duralite. My
okay.
truck's a 99 model, and I've had it since it was 164,000. And I've never put a new charger cooler on here. So I'm pretty sure this one's probably leaking. It probably don't hold any kind of pressure.
Odds are it probably is. And again, we have to start separating some of these issues. Now, when we go back to the tires, because we kind of threw that in there too. The other thing on a turbo boost gauge with a truck this many miles, first of all, some of the turbo boost gauges aren't very accurate. When you say it's 25 to 28, I understand what you're saying. Sometimes the gauges are hard to read. They don't give they don't give us small enough increments so we can tell the difference between 26 and 28. I mean, we just know it's somewhere in there, but the gauge isn't very accurate. And as it gets older, the gauge just may not be working right. That may be all that's going on with the turbo boost. There are a lot of things that could be happening. The tire issue, when you say you switched tires and we only picked up a couple tenths. Now, if we got right down and measured it, and let's say that you went from whatever tire you had, the 726s, you switched to the Yokohamas, and let's say fuel mileage goes up 3/10.
Right.
That's a pretty big increase to begin with. I mean, it's $3,000 a year in your pocket. But the other thing we have to remember is that the 726, I'm assuming, was worn out.
They were getting pretty close to it.
Okay. So now that tire is on its own. Forget everything else. That tire is already 6.5% more efficient than it was when it was new.
Right.
So now
right,
you
right.
switched from a worn-out tire to a new tire, which means we lose 6.5% to begin with, and we still picked up 0.3 mph. That's fantastic.
I see what you're saying. I see what you're saying. Now, tell me, I've made a decision with this many miles on the truck, and you tell me if I'm going in the right way. I just can't stand hearing every show that comes along. Everybody, you know, there's a lot of drivers that call in, and it's EGR this and EGR that, and everything's going wrong. I've about made up my mind that I'm going to keep this truck. It's, you know, it's a 99 model, and I'm going to have a rebuild on it, you know, an end frame done on it, and turbo. I'm just going to pretty much redo, you know, everything
okay.
that I could redo.
Yep.
You think I'm going in the right way, or should I go to like a $60,000 or $70,000 truck?
No, absolutely not. I think you're going in the right direction. That in my opinion, even when we get crazy about how much money we put back into an old truck, and for example, our budget on our project right now is over $60,000 to put into an old worn out truck with 1.5 million miles. And as crazy
right.
as that sounds, to spend that kind of money, and we're going to an extreme. I mean, we're taking the cab off the frame and soda blasting every part on the truck, repainting it, making it look like new. We're putting a lot of money into it. And we're going to the extreme to prove a point. I don't see how we can go wrong. We will be able to get that $60,000 back out in value. Because when we're done, we're going to have a really nice-looking, comfortable, efficient truck that probably gets over 8 miles to the gallon and is going to be good for another, you know, 700,000 or 800,000 miles without a lot of maintenance cost. How can you go wrong?
That's what I'm thinking, and that's what I've made up my mind I'm going to do is I'm just going to do that because
Yep, you're on the right track. That's what we're doing, and is. I know it sounds crazy, but it's one of these things where we have to change the way we think about this. We have to stop thinking about it like, why would you put $60,000 into a truck you only paid $7,000 for and you almost bought it out of the salvage yard? Well, we have to stop looking at it as a $7,000 truck. We have to look at it as the potential for earning income with it. And if we put $60,000 into it, and now we have a truck that really goes out and moves freight more efficiently than a $120,000 truck, and we'll have a long lifetime of doing it, how can we go wrong? It's just a mindset, and we have to change the way we think about things, and that's what we're trying to prove with this project. Let's go to Mississippi. Sonny, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. You got a great show, and I think you provide a tremendous service to our industry.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome, man. Thank you. My question is to pull an oil analysis sample. How can I do it from the top of the engine and not pulling the plug underneath?
There are a couple methods. You stick a tube down the dipstick itself. What engine is it? Depends on the engine. There are a couple different methods for doing it.
Detroit 60.
Okay. You and I'm assuming you don't have any sort of a bypass filter that would allow you to do it.
Not at this time. I'm a lease owner, so I can't do it at this time. But I am running synthetics, and I do want to do it with oil samples. The
Got
oil
it.
Analysis.
You can... You can use a sample tube to go down the dipstick. Who are you going to get the oil analysis kits from?
AMSOIL.
Okay. I would talk to AMSOIL directly and ask them what their preferred method is.
All right. I was looking for maybe like a pump from maybe Northern Tool or something, a little 12-volt pump or something. The little pump you buy at Walmart for $7, it just doesn't work.
Yeah.
And
That, like I say, there are some possibilities. And what I like to do when it comes to sampling is I like to talk to the lab and find out what their preferred method is, because the way we draw the sample can make a difference in the results. So,
okay.
if I were going to do something with, Horizon Labs, or Polaris, I would call them and say, hey, look, here's what I've got. Here's my truck. You tell me the best way for me to get a sample, that works with your system.
I appreciate that. It's a good thought. Can I ask another question?
Sure, go ahead.
On my Qualcomm, it shows the gas mileage, the fuel mileage.
Okay.
Have you said in the past that you dislike that using the computer figures? Or
it's
do you think
not that I, yeah, it's not that I don't like it. It's just I want to verify fuel mileage on paper. The Qualcomm can be way off. Its mileage is very accurate if it's a GPS-based mileage. So the mileage numbers, how many miles we've put on the truck. I like using GPS data for that. But the fuel running through the engine being picked up by the ECM isn't always accurate, especially if we idle a lot. So it only takes us literally less than a minute while we're getting fuel at the pump to calculate our fuel mileage on paper. So I like both. I mean, I like to look at my ECM, I'll look at Qualcomm, I'll look at fuel tax reports, but I'm going to calculate it on paper every time I fuel up because that's the most accurate. Let's go to South Carolina. Harold, welcome to the program.
Hello, Kevin. Fair tax now.
Yeah, let's get it done.
Yeah, let's get it done. Hey, I got a couple of things for you. Number one, well, I went through and had my truck covered. The company kept on wanting to push me to go faster, to get this load done to get the next load. Well, I put a stop to that. Now I got my truck covered to where they can't push me any faster than the truck will go now.
Good. Okay.
Yep. And another thing, freight rates in different areas. I know there's different lanes, different rates, different this, different that. Here, 2 weeks ago, I was down in Florida in the Tampa area, and they sent me a load paying 70 cents for 44,000 pounds to go from the Tampa area to the L.A. area.
Oh, you gotta be kidding me.
Yes, and they wanted to know why I was turning that load down.
Now, you hear me make the statement all the time, there's no such thing as cheap freight, and I say that to get people thinking.
Yep.
But what I really mean is there's no set number that we could say this is cheap freight and this isn't. We have to look at every individual situation, and I can honestly say that load you just described to me, that is the definition of cheap freight, and I can't think of a situation where I would pull that freight. I just can't think of, because even if you tell me once I get to L.A., there's a load waiting for me that pays $3 a mile going to Chicago, I still have to believe I can find a better paying load out of Tampa to L.A. than that one.
Yep. And when I turned that one down, within 5 minutes, it wasn't even 5 minutes, they got me a $2 load out of Florida that went up to Fargo area. Then I got a $2.50 load out of Minnesota, 75 miles from Fargo, back down to the Carolinas, I believe it was.
Yeah. That's a great example of why we have to stay on top of these rates. We have to think two and three loads ahead. I've got a webinar coming up, sometime. I'll have to look at the date. I have a webinar coming up all about this, the load selection, rates, that kind of thing coming up soon. Let's go to Ohio. Wayne, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. How's it going tonight?
Good. What's on your mind?
The fast truck you're building for that company is going along with a lot of these owner operators out here anymore. Don't seem to want to slow down. Kind of like that guy that bought the Pete from Bruce. That's, his article said he's running 70 in it. But characters just released that 247 rear end. What about putting that in for these guys that can't slow down?
We could. And if we, and I was just, it's one of the reasons I was talking to Meritor. We have to balance cost. I would love to put that in as a true single axle with a 247 and a direct drive, because right now what I have available to me to get this truck to, you know, the guy wants it at the show, so we've got some challenges here. And after we build this one and he puts it on the road and we see the fuel mileage, I want to go back to him and say, look, we've proven what we've said. We said we can improve your fuel mileage right now a mile to a mile and a half per gallon. I think I can improve it another half mile per gallon if we do this. And you're exactly right. One of the problems with a 247 ratio is that it really hurts what's called our startability or gradability. I don't either. The ability to get the truck moving from a dead start with a lot of weight on it, and now you put somebody down in a tough dock, and, man, you better have a good driver to get that thing out of there. And I asked Meritor, I said, how are you addressing the startability problem with something like this? And he said, we're really designing that rear end, that 247, for the newer engines like the DD15 and the pack car engines, because they produce so much torque at a very low RPM, even as low as 900 RPM.
Yeah.
That DD15 is producing all kinds of torque.
Mm-hmm.
So this new rear end, first of all, is designed to handle a lot of torque, and that engine increases our startability. So we may not be able to make that work with an older DDEC 3 or DDEC 4 engine, but it may work with some of the newer engines.
Yeah, I don't want that high. I'm running one of your dreaded Swift trucks that you don't like, and, you know, pulling a covered wagon around, but, you know, I'm doing between 8 and 8.5. You know,
wow.
The joke man's doing 8.5 to 9 with his, so,
right.
You know. We're doing good out of these Swift trucks, you know, if you drive them right. But, you know, it's 54 mile an hour, 12 years. So.
Yeah. That's what it's all about, making money. So glad it's working out for you. I'm going to try to squeeze in one more. Sean in Baltimore, welcome to the program.
Yeah, how you doing, Kevin?
Good.
All right. I was calling because I had a quick question. I'm owner operator, and I wanted to purchase another truck. And my credit is not all that great. You know, through hard times, things of that nature. Where would be a good place if I could get another truck where they wouldn't try to rape me on a down payment?
It's a tough market right now for financing of any kind, and it's a really tough market for anybody who's got, you know, bruises on their credit score. One of the places you can go for up to $25,000 is something called peer-to-peer lending. And if you go to Google, and I don't have a lot of time to explain this right now, but if you go to Google, do a Google search for peer, P-E-E-R, peer-to-peer lending, and do some reading. That is one of the options for getting cash right now without all the hassles of a bank and some pretty reasonable rates. Now, if your credit is bruised, you're going to pay more than average, but that's just the way it's got to be. But you're not going to have a lot of cash. There, I could go into another half hour about whether or not this might be a good idea for you right now or whether there are other places we should be focusing. But that's another show, and I'm all out of time. So I want to thank everybody for joining me tomorrow night. We'll do it again, 10:30 Eastern Time. And in 30 minutes, we have the live show coming up on SiriusXM, so we'll see you there. Thanks for joining me. Remember, be safe, be profitable, be responsible, and master the journey. Good night, everyone. I'm Kevin Rutherford.